distribution of independent digital black media. Find out more by going to blacktalkradionetwork.com or blacktalkmediaproject.org and look for the menu tab, Crowdfunding Black Media. Black Talk Media Project, helping to provide you with new black media for the new millennium.
Opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium.
The Mind, Body, and Spirit Radio Show. Tonight it is Wednesday, June the 14th, 2017. We are moving right on into summer. The summer solstice should be coming up. I think it's around the 20th or 21st. Satellite. Welcome in, Satellite. Let me welcome you in. Also, namaste.
Namaste. Namaste.
How are you tonight? I'm well. Thank you very much. And your care. I'm well.
It's Tuesday, June 20th. It's summer solstice.
June the 20th. Yes. Okay. Okay. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Summer solstice. So we'll have to celebrate summer solstice. But welcome in. Namaste to you and everyone else. All of our
listeners.
Yes, welcome in. Today is going to be another explosive show. I'm so excited. Oh, namaste to Scotty. Namaste, Scotty. Hey, Scotty, holding it down. Mm-hmm. Yes, in North Kakalaki. June the 16th. Oh, my God, it's going to be such a beautiful day for me because not only are we filming June 16th, but June the 16th, this coming Friday, is Tupac Shakur's birthday, his born day, and the All Eyes on Me
All Eyes on Me
is premiering June the 16th. Oh my God, I'm already, look, as soon as we finish off air, I'm ordering these tickets because when I logged into YouTube, I was already this trailer and saying tickets on sale now. So I'm like, oh my God. He's earning tickets and get up there early. I'm almost kind of like, dying. If we weren't busy Friday, I could make that matinee. But my goodness. That should be a black national holiday. Tupac. That's the hood black national holiday. Revolutionary
right.
Black national holiday.
Right.
Along with many others. And speaking of Tupac, let me just read this quote that I came across, because we will share some quotes from Tupac Amaru Shakur tonight, because as you know, he is one of my favorites, and one of our lyrical angels here at the Mind, Body, and Spirit Radio Show, and we will honor him tonight. As our African spirit honoree tonight, Tupac Shakur. Here's a quote from Tupac. Pac. Okay. I would rather be stricken blind than to live with that expression of mind. Tupac.
Right. I love it.
Let me just read that one more time.
Yeah.
I would rather be stricken blind than to live without expression of mind, being able to express yourself. I remember when NWA had that song, Express Yourself, and it's about Prince, as I mentioned last week, about being free and expressing yourself. I'm so grateful that I grew up in the 70s. Tupac and I were born in the same year, 1971, one of the best years, 1970, 1971, okay, and anything prior to that, because we give props to all of you. But I tell you, that 1971 year and 70, oh my God, we had an opportunity to have parents and grandparents that really exposed us to our culture and living. I think about the fish fries and like the rent fries shows that we used to see on Good Times, and how George and Weezy, you know, moved on up. So yes, I love being born in 1971. One of my favorites, like I said, Tupac Shakur, born June 16th, 1971, and we are honoring him tonight. And we'll share some more information about our revolutionary lyrical angel, Tupac Shakur, and that film coming out, All Eyes on Me. All Eyes on Me. We'll share some history about All Eyes on Me. And speaking of which, we should just let people know that the young sister named Raven Farrell, who will portray Tupac's sister in All Eyes on Me, will be here with us next week. So she's going to come here to the Mind, Body, and Spirit radio show and talk to us about her role in this All Eyes on Me film, a biopic of Tupac Shakur's life. Can't wait. So excited. Super excited. Yay, all over the place. So, and speaking of yays all over the place, tonight we're talking about not only honoring Tupac Shakur, but tonight we will also have a guest with us, Rob Akua. He is going to share with us some of his works and speak on depression. So we're talking about depression with author Rob Akua. And he has a new book called Death of the Dead, which speaks on African Americans coping with depression and anxiety in a heartless world. And remember, you can always send your letters and questions about dating, career, love, sex, health and relationships, etc. to the Mind, Body, and Spirit Radio Show at gmail.com. And you can call in and share your thoughts and comments at 866-510-9025, 866-510-9025. And you can log on to Black Talk Radio Network and also sign up for BTR and donate. You know, a lot of YouTubers have these Patreon accounts, and so a lot of the YouTubers that you follow, with all the changes with YouTube now, a lot of the YouTubers, and particularly a lot of black YouTubers, are asking for us to donate $2 or $5 to their accounts to help them with their production because of the advertising. That's a whole topic, a topic that we really should have one of those YouTubers come on and speak about, because that was a major change with the way that these alteration in the way that the YouTubers, were able to monetize their channel. And so now they're not able to monetize it in the same way as previously. So, hey, now they have to ask for the, now they have the Patreon accounts. And you can donate. I'm donating to a few of them. There's a light. Last week, we talked about colorism, and that topic is a topic I would say that we should not just have a part two or part three on, but we should actually have ongoing conversations about colorism, I would say.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I would say that too. It's an ongoing issue. It's been going on for so long, and it really does affect a lot of people. Light, dark, very light, I mean, just all shades. And it reminds me of an experience that I had when I was in school in the 60s. I wanted to be a majorette because I was very athletic. I had strong limbs. I didn't do any sports, but I wanted to be a majorette. But it was automatically understood if you weren't light, or at least like light paper brown, like tan, you couldn't be a majorette. And the instructor was always very, very light, and she made it very clear that, okay, you got to be almost like me to be a majorette. And she was actually mean she had a disdain sort of attitude for people who were dark. And what bothered me as a child is that when I would look at her and others, I would say, well, they don't look that pretty to me. I just felt like they just have light skin. Why is it that, you know, they get all the breaks? And by the time I was a senior, you didn't have to be very, very light to be a majorette, but there were still no dark skin girls as majorette. And it's very, and for a long time, I didn't think I was pretty for a very long time. And it's very disturbing that a half century later, we're still dealing with this.
You were very pretty, but why didn't you think that you were very pretty growing up?
Well, because the distinction in light skin girls and dark skin girls, you were called all kinds of names if you were dark like myself. And the names, you just the energy from it, you just knew it was ugly. Okay. It was just like dark and black and ugly went together, you know, like if you said black, you said ugly. If you said ugly, you said black. So
Black ASS, or with your black ASS, your ugly black.
Yeah.
That with your ugly black self.
No, it was always bold. With your old ugly black self.
and they really want to clown you and make you feel bad with your black self. that's just horrible. I'm just this dark, ugly black.
You just hit me in the belly.
This miscreant, this reprobate black reprobate. Oh my God. Mm-mm-mm.
Yeah, and it's just light black.
That was common.
Dark black. It's still black.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, you really messed up when somebody said with your black ass, with your black ass, your black self.
they'd say the B and the L like black, you know.
Black.
Yeah.
You know. Black. Black. Oh my God! I know.
But you know, I love the quote from Tupac. He says, "Some say the blacker the berry, the sweeter the juice. I say the darker the flesh, then the deeper the roots." I love that. I was like, "Yay! That's a nice message." I love that quote of his. So, that was from one of his. Keep your head up. Yeah, keep your head up.
Keep your head up. Mm-hmm. Keep your head up. That's one of my favorites, and of course, Brenda's Had a Baby. Absolutely love Brenda's Had a Baby.
Yes, yes. I think those two songs. I know he said a lot of derogatory things about women in a lot of his songs, but those two songs, he really empathized with the plight of the woman in a way that I have not seen any other artist do.
And the
quote, the part of the song, Keep Your Head Up, he says, you know what makes me unhappy when brothers make babies and leave a young mother to be a pappy? And since we all came from a woman, got a name from a woman, and a game from a woman, I wonder why we take from our women, why we rape our women, do we hate our women? I think it's time to kill for our women. time to heal our women.
Heal our
be
women.
Real to
heal
our women.
To our women.
Yes.
Be
yes.
That. Oh.
Yes.
I love that.
And it says, and
that.
Since a man can't make one, he has no right to tell a woman when and where to create one. So will the real men get up? Yes.
No, you sit up, lady.
Yeah, man, get up.
Head up.
Tupac. Oh. Tupac.
Rest in power, brother. What about that case?
Evelyn.
Yes, I was just getting ready to mention this case. As people know, I'm rarely tuned in to corporate media. If it shows up in my news feed, something from corporate media, then, okay, it shows up in my news feed. But I don't even have cable. So, but anyhow, this case with this Jackson, Mississippi case, let me pull this up, with this severed head and burned body being found in Jackson, Mississippi, where Chokwe Lumumba Jr. was recently elected as mayor. I did not really see much discussion about this case until someone sent this to me, I believe Sunday night. And I think that when I began to research the story, I believe the Root reported on this story 2 days prior to Sunday, so like Friday, I believe. But officers said the head and torso belonged to 30-year-old Jeremy Jerome Jackson. So some children found this severed head on a porch. I hate to be so morbid. But the head was found, the severed head was found on a porch by some children, and then about a mile away, the burned body was also discovered. So let's see, the headless torso was badly burned, said Jackson Police Chief Lee Vance. I have been hearing amongst the rumblings that this has been a message sent to Chokwe Lumumba Jr. So we know the history of Jackson, Mississippi. Just recently in Jackson, there was a young man found lynched. And that wasn't really, you know, of course it was just an article or two written about it. People spoke out, gave their thoughts about it, but then it's just like, okay, let's just go back to passing the chicken. So many people are being lynched, and these killings, and people are being attacked, and I just say to people, if you have not already enrolled in a self-defense class or had some self-defense training, do so. And particularly if you're one person that travels alone quite often, have your protection. Let people know where you're going. Make your friends aware of your travels just in case anything happens. And we should try to travel in groups, like I see the Indians and Asians. Right.
Travel in a
pack, two or three or four people together, because we have to watch out for each other and protect each other. And I am praying for protection for everyone. And also, you can, have some gemstones, certain gemstones that you can use or wear or put in your pocket or your purse for protection. And say your prayers of protection. And ask for certain ancestors, whatever it is that you believe in, your spirits, whatever you believe in, praying to Jesus, black Jesus, white Jesus, God, whoever. Go ahead on and do what you have to do. But we have to prepare ourselves and protect ourselves. So, let me see, I have another Tupac quote, too, that I'll share shortly. But before we go into that, we're going to listen to this clip on Colin Kaepernick, about Colin Kaepernick, from Derek Muhammad. Derek Muhammad is here in Houston, Texas, and we had an opportunity to interview him. So we'll play that clip shortly. And he is giving his position on why Colin Kaepernick, why he hopes that Colin Kaepernick is not selected by an NFL team. So for those of you that follow football, you know that Colin Kaepernick has not been picked up, as far as I know as of today. He has not been selected by an NFL team. But Featherlight, you have any comments on this case in Jackson, Mississippi, with this severed head being found by children. That's just so horrible that the children will have to find that severed head.
Yeah. It's the impact on the children that they will have with them indefinitely. It's a message. And I noticed that, you know, I don't, you know, keep up with the news either, but I get those flashes on my tablet when I open it up, and I hadn't seen anything about it.
Now, Delta did say that she did see a mention of this severed head story with her news channel there in Mississippi, but she's in Mississippi, so that's local news.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Just wondering if anyone else has access to CNN. Have they been seeing this? Scotty actually has a video on this story also. So I haven't looked at it yet, Scotty, but I will.
Oh, one other thing before we move on. I'm not saying that this thing with the congressman didn't happen, but you notice how everything that's something that's really, 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 really bad happens with an African-American. Boom, something else really, really happens that kind of takes elsewhere that takes our attention away.
Some type of distraction. So you're speaking of the shooting that happened. The congressman, what's his name, Scalise, there was a shooting this morning in Alexandria, Virginia. And he was shot in the hip while they were practicing for a softball game. And I do have some information on this story. I'll share that shortly, but I want to move on to maybe I will, maybe I won't. I mean, you know, hey, look, he got shot, okay? I mean, you start taking away people's assistance and their welfare and food stamps. What do you think is going to happen? And I think that's kind of pretty much what the man was saying in his statement before he shot them up. Okay, before he went to shoot up the place. They talk about us shooting up the place in Chicago. Hold on now, wait a minute. I'm talking about Chicago too much. You're over in Alexandria, Virginia, shooting up the place too. So let's see. Let's hear this clip from Derek Muhammad speaking on Colin Kaepernick not being picked up by an NFL team. There are some people saying that they are boycotting the NFL season. They're canceling their... what is that, fan subscription, whatever it is, sports pack or something.
Peace
like
family.
That. But some people saying that they're going to boycott the NFL. I don't know. What are you going to do? Colin's not getting picked up, people being shot and stabbed, walking on the streets, so maybe some people feel like we'll show the NFL a thing or two. Maybe we'll start our own team. But anyway, let's hear this clip.
Peace family. Let's get to work. Today I want to talk about why I, Brother Derek Muhammad, just me personally, hope that no NFL team picks up our brother Colin Kaepernick. Now I know some of you are looking with your eyebrows all crooked right now and asking yourself the question, why would you not want our brother to be able to play the game of football professionally? Let me first say that I have great love and respect for Colin Kaepernick. I don't know the brother personally, but his spirit radiates as such to where I feel like we have kindred spirits and that we're both willing to put ourselves on the line in order to see our people free. And speaking of the word freedom, right now, Kaepernick is what is called a free agent. The operative word is free. But he is a free agent, a free man looking for an owner. You get where I'm going, don't you? If Colin Kaepernick is picked up by an NFL team, number one, that team is going to do any and everything within its power at the onset of him signing that contract to control him at all costs. If and when he gets back on the field, and I don't care if Colin Kaepernick writes an apology letter to every flag waving, flag saluting American in this country saying, I'm sorry for not standing for the national anthem, which I don't think he would do. But even if he relented on his strong position, they would still hate him. And he would still be a target for every defense or defensive team on that field. They would try their best to hurt that brother. What am I saying? I'm saying that we're rejoicing because a free man is looking for an owner. And if the free man does not find an owner, we're saying that we're going to boycott the NFL, which I believe we should do anyway. We'll get into that in a minute. But I personally believe that just as Barack Obama will probably be a greater asset to his people, not as the president, but as a free man, I believe that Colin Kaepernick will be a greater asset to us without the restraints being put on him by a team. Now, I know that Colin Kaepernick, matter of fact, let me talk to him. Brother Kaepernick, I know that you love the game of football. And I know, Brother Kaepernick, that it has been your lifelong dream, your lifelong ambition to be a great quarterback in the NFL. And in a lot of ways, you have already achieved that goal. But there's a thing that I call, you know, desire versus destiny. And while it is your desire to continue with your football career, it just might not be your destiny. Your destiny may be wrapped up in the stand that you took, not just for yourself, but for all of us. Another reason that I wouldn't shed a tear if he's not picked up by a football team is because the brother will get the opportunity to preserve his health. I mean, how many black men who once played in the NFL are walking around right now and can't even remember their own middle name from multiple concussions over several games, over several years, over several downs, and the NFL refuses to take any type of responsibility for this type of punishment having been taken by players? I don't wish that on my brother. And me knowing that they're going to do nothing but try to do him harm, I personally will rejoice if he makes it through this quote unquote draft season or whatever you call it, and he ends up a free man. Now, for those of you who wish to boycott the NFL, you need to boycott the NFL anyway. Why? What about the thousands of black men that have been exploited by the NFL, and when they could no longer do what the slave master called run, nigga, run, they just chunked them to the woodpile? You're talking about men who have been playing football since they were 5, 6, 7 years old, played all the way through high school, all the way through college, made it to the pros, and because they suffered an injury or may have dropped a ball on the kick return or something like that, they'll fire you on the spot, send you back home to your mother's house, and because you have no plan B, you thought that football was going to be it for you. Many of those brothers ended up in a life of crime or languishing in prison or on drugs, and the NFL didn't give a damn what happened to those brothers that they used. If you want to boycott the NFL, we got reason to boycott the NFL. How about the fact that 70% of the players in the NFL are black? But how many owners do we have? You have no majority owners at all in the NFL. So if Colin Kaepernick gets a job, he's not going to be working for somebody black. Why? because for years they've blackballed our millionaires and our billionaires from being in the exclusive club of NFL owners. So yeah, you've got Kirby John Caldwell, who owns a small piece of the Texans. I believe Venus and Serena own a very small piece of the Miami Dolphins. But the National Football League has been and still is and will probably always be controlled by white men. Why should you boycott the NFL? How about the fact that you have millions of young boys running around here believing that that's going to be their quote unquote ticket out of the ghetto, when less than 1% of our boys even have a chance at making it to the NFL? Why do they want to be NFL players? It's not just because they see brothers who play ball riding around in Rolls Royces and things of that nature. They want to be in the NFL because every time they walk in the house during football season, that's what's on the television. And sometimes we as parents, we don't even praise our own children, but we'll stand and clap for Russell Wilson or whatever his name is that plays for the Seahawks, or Richard Sherman, or the brother who plays for the Dallas Cowboys, Brother Easy. Oh, we stand and applaud them. So we applaud football players and don't even pay attention to our own children. So what do our children do? Our young boys will say, man, if that's what pleases my father and my mother, I want to go and be that. Let me go and be that. But it's slim pickings for them. So let's boycott the NFL for our youth and show them that we have more discipline than we have been displaying, and that we can turn off the football game and turn on a chess match or something of that nature. Why should you boycott the NFL? Because the NFL has been racist from the jump. I mean, look at Ben Roethlisberger, Mr. Rapist himself. But they've still found a way to sanitize him and make him the darling of the NFL. But Michael Vick is a pariah because he fought dogs? Come on now. So as long as Brother Colin Kaepernick has made wise investments and is financially secure and is able to feed his family and create a future for himself, I say to hell with the NFL. And I don't think that we as a community should base whether we should boycott the NFL on whether or not they give a free black man a job. What the hell are we talking about?
All right, and that was Derek Muhammad speaking about boycotting the NFL, or should you boycott the NFL, based on not only Colin Kaepernick not being picked up, but by the fact that, or what he's proposing or positing, that the NFL is primarily owned by people that did not look like the players. You can call in and share your thoughts with us at 866-510-9025. But right now, Satellite, do you have any comments about Derek Muhammad?
I have too many comments, but we'll get to that later. I want to go on and welcome in our guest. He made a lot of good points, and I'm glad that we were able to share that with the audience.
Okay. Well, now we are going to, as we mentioned, have a discussion about depression and anxiety, and depression and anxiety in particular in the black community, and how we're dealing with depression and anxiety. You have so many people coming back from the military with PTSD. They may have some mental illness or suffering from depression, anxiety. We have young people, millennials, that are completing college and coming out of college to find that they're having difficulties landing employment in their career. So you have so many millennials that are feeling anxiety about finding employment or relationships. People just experiencing anxiety about their careers, the careers that they're probably working in. The job may be stressful and causing depression or anxiety. So tonight we want to speak with author Rob Jenkins, Rob Akua Jenkins. He's a writer and award-winning filmmaker within the genre of science fiction, which I love, and fantasy, horror, and action. Love all those. He is a graduate of Marymount Manhattan College with a BA in Communication of Arts and a member of the National Communication Association, Lamba Phi Eta, and Emma Bowen alum. He is the author of 5 published books, which includes his newest, which he will talk to us about tonight, Death of the Dead. And this particular piece addresses depression and anxiety. So we want to welcome Rob Akua in. And how are you? Welcome in. Namaste, brother.
Namaste. Hi, how are you doing?
I'm well.
Wonderful.
Yes.
And by the way,
thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, no problem. Just to clear up one thing, my name is Rob Akua.
Akua, thank you, Rob Akua. See, I was trying to put my own little flair on it, but okay, Rob
Akua. I like that. I did like that.
Well, welcome in. You're such a talented brother. When just reading through your resume and your words, I said, oh my goodness, what a brilliant brother. So we are honored to have you here with us and talk about your works. You know, I don't think that one show would give you enough time just to speak about your works and your projects. So I was going to ask if you could come back and join us again, but let me just go ahead on and get that out after just really reading through your resume. My goodness, all of your filmmaking and your skills, I'd love for you to share share with us about how you even delved into that and some tips for aspiring filmmakers as well. So we'll have to invite you back for sure.
Awesome. Yeah, I would like that.
Good. So how did you come up with this name, Rob Akua, your pen name? Because your name is Rob Jenkins. Akua. I'm sorry. Okay, I have it. Akua. I'll think of Akua water. Okay.
Yes,
my apologies. Rob Akua. How did you come up with that pen name?
I came up with that name in 5th grade, to be honest. That was like an alter ego that I just named myself after for whatever reason. I just like the name. I just like how Akua sounded, so I just named myself Rob Akua. And I was very much into science fiction at the time, so I thought it just sounded something like that. It sounded like an alien name or something like that. So when I was when I started publishing a lot of my books, my name is Rob Jenkins. I noticed there was a lot of Rob Jenkins out there. So I was like, I kind of want a name where I can make it easier for my readers to find me. And when I was thinking about names, that one from 5th grade came back up. And I was like, oh, like Rob Akua. Like, let's just see how that goes. And stuck with it.
Interesting. Okay. Rob Akua. And you decided upon that name pretty early. Amazing.
Yes.
I recently thought of my pen name maybe just a few years ago. So, once again, brilliant. Tell us about this award that you won for your film project, because you are an award-winning writer and filmmaker. Talk to us about that.
So, when I was in college, I did a documentary called What Was Ruined? Because it's based off of, well, my school at the time was doing a play called Ruined, which is a play by playwright Lynn Nottage. And I wanted to document, this is one of the first times the school I was going to, Marymount Manhattan, had, well, in my attendance, had a predominantly people of color that were going to be in the cast. of this play. And I wanted to document that process. I wanted to document it. I thought it was pretty historical for me. It was pretty important. And through that, I learned what the play was about, how, you know, it's about issues, things that people are going through in the Democratic Republic of the Congo, and things that women are going through over there, which these horrible, horrible atrocities happening to them, and just, you know, just history about the area and things like that. So I filmed them making the play and then also talking about how the play affected them. And when I presented it to the school, when I finished, it ended up winning an award.
Wow.
Yeah.
Excellent. Congratulations. And thank you. That I will definitely have to look for that project, because let's see, you do have a list where we can find many of your works, and so we'll share that also before you leave for sure, because in reading some of your works in the Death of the Dead piece, I hope that you can have just a moment to share a reading with us tonight, because I said, oh my gosh, oh, I love this. I love this one. And then there was another one. Let's see. I want to mention this. I think it's Psychic Vampire. Is that one of your pieces in the, yes, Psychic Vampire. Oh, a creature who feeds off the life force of others. And see, we talk about psychic vampires here.
Right.
My
right.
Mind and spirit.
Yes.
So.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm glad
you
wrote
about it.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
So your interest in writing began at quite an early age. You were about, you were eight? Talk to us about your first writing.
Oh, so my first writing, I can remember I got a notebook from my mother's office at the time. It was in our basement of our house. And I just started, I don't know what drew me to do it. It just felt very self-motivated. I just started writing the story. And it was very much like fantasy. Like when I look back on it now, it reminds me of like Narnia, like Chronicles of Narnia, something like that. It was about like a kid going into a new world and being a king, and there's all these different types of things like that. And I drew pictures in there and everything. I just loved to do it. Ever since I can remember, I've loved to write. Even before I knew how to make letters, I would make scribbles and pretend that it said something.
Oh, that's your passion.
Yeah, my passion for sure.
Your purpose and your calling.
Yeah.
At a very early age.
Wow. Yes.
Well, what inspired you to write this book, Death of the Dead?
So Death of the Dead, to me, is very much a reflection piece. It's pretty much about a dark time that I went through, but also what I feel like a lot of people are going through right now. So it centers around a character that feels like he's the living dead. Like he feels dead inside, but he's going through the motions of life. And so he kind of calls himself a zombie. He feels like he's a zombie walking in this world. And a lot of the themes came from just me learning how to get in touch with my emotions and feel my emotions instead of trying to disconnect from them. And basically, through connecting with my emotions, getting in touch with my true self. And the message of the whole book is called Death of the Dead. When you go into these emotions, and you go into your emotions, period, whether dark or light, something happens. You transform. Especially people, you know, try to stay out of the dark emotions. So going into your dark emotions a lot of times can feel like death. When you confront your emotions, it can feel like death. Your mind has a hard time deciphering a lot of times what difference between physical harm and emotional harm. It processes it in the same place in the brain. So it can feel like you're going to die. But then when you come out of that and you come on the other side of that, you're transformed. Your life, you are changed. You feel lighter inside. So Death of the Dead is called that because it's the death of the dead parts. When you're reborn, death dies. It was called Death of the Dead.
You know, I actually I actually learned how to read the tarot cards, and sometimes when people look at the death card, they feel like, oh my God, somebody in my family is going to die, but that is not what their card represents. Their card represents exactly what you just stated, that you are now about to release some old ways and transform, some things about to change. There's a transition taking place. So exactly what you just spoke of, you'll shed some old ways or old habits, and you'll go through a transformation. You actually will. So.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. All about transformation, definitely rebirth.
It's all about transformation, and I'm looking at the transition, endings, beginnings, change.
Right.
That's what that card represents. And so I love this. I'm putting this on my list. I can go on iTunes to purchase this book, right?
Yes, it's available on iTunes. It should now be available on Amazon, and it's also available on Lulu.com.
And
if people go to my website, you can find all the information there. My website is r0bproductions.com. So Rob Productions, except the O in Rob is zero. And you click books, and all my books are available right there.
Okay, great. You have
Say it again
with us.
It's called r0bproductions.com. So pretty much robproductions.com, but the O in Rob is zero.
Okay, got it.
Zero, yeah.
Gotcha. All right. And now this image cover for the book, how did you select the title and this image cover? The image cover to go along with this title. I love it.
It's funny you had mentioned the tarot card for death. Mm-hmm. A lot of times it's a skeleton. That's just what came to mind when I thought about the title and when I was writing it. And also that's kind of how I guess imagined myself at that time. It was like the depression and the anxiety I was feeling during this particular time in my life. It kind of, when I thought about it, or personification of it, it kind of was like a skeleton. And I could have viewed that as like a bad or a scary thing, which someone would, but in facing it and learning from it, it was like, oh, this was a transformation thing for me. This was a way for me to get back to myself, to get back in my center. So it's supposed to be, you know, I know it might look sinister, but it's really about just rebirth. And as we talked about earlier, transformation. Exactly. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, that's how it is here, in particular in Western society. Things are made to look sinister. They really aren't sinister, and what's made to seem pure and innocent is not so pure and innocent.
Right.
Exactly. I'm glad that you did that.
Yeah, it's the perception.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Perception that's implanted.
That's implanted.
Yep.
I mean, a skeleton is actually our body, right? So
right.
Exactly.
206 bones like that. So, now the subject of depression and anxiety, it's quite important to me, and I know that it's important to you. How have you been able to deal with anxiety and live and cope through depression and anxiety? Has writing helped you in any way?
Yes, writing is completely important, and this is why I think that, because overall how I've been able to cope with depression and anxiety is because I kind of view my emotions as a message feedback system in a way. My emotions are just trying to tell me where I'm at and how I'm feeling. So when I sit and I'm still with them and I listen to them, there's always some type of insight or some type of message that comes with that. And a lot of times writing about your emotions, you might look at them and say, oh, wow, I'm really feeling this. You might come to some type of perspective that you can do to either change your environment. There might be something that you're thinking about. You're like, oh, I need to change this, you know, to make things more healthy for you. And your emotional body is just trying to tell you, listen, this needs to change. We're not sure about this. It just wants to be addressed. It just wants to be talk to, in a way. So that's how I've been able to definitely cope whenever it arises, it comes up.
Writing for me is, it's like a, I feel a joy when I write. I feel relaxed, relieved. It puts me in a different space and place when I write. I love writing. So I can totally relate to what you're speaking on in terms of writing, helping you to cope through depression.
Yes. Yes.
Thank you for sharing that. Thank you.
I love what you said about
journaling is so important. I'm sorry, go ahead,
Heather. I was just going to say I love what he said about the emotions and paying attention to the emotions, because many times we avoid our emotions, and your emotions never go away. You have to address them. They just lie dormant, and they release themselves at the most inopportune, awkward times, like getting angry with someone, you know, and instead of just being angry with that person and angry about what they did, I am now to the point of saying, okay, why did I get angry about that? What is that really all about? Let me just go and see what brought that anger out in the first place. It really wasn't about what I fussed about. It's something else. So it's so important that we pay attention. Like you say, they are trying to let us know something. And we have to listen to the emotions to see, okay, what's going on? You know, what's going on here? So it's really very, very important that we address our emotions, and it's so good to hear a male say that, because a lot of times men are told to hide their emotions, and we all have them, and so we should be allowed to express them, or else they'll explode.
Right. They're going to come out one way or another. They're going to express themselves.
Right. Yes, one way or the other. One way or the other.
I think that people should stop teaching their sons to hide their emotions. I think that people should start teaching their sons and their daughters that it's okay to be vulnerable. It's okay to ask for help. It's okay to be afraid.
Right.
It's okay. Really. It's okay. But, I mean, don't be fearful, but it's okay to have some trepidation about exploring something different.
Exactly.
Or expressing yourself.
I totally agree, and that's one of the big reasons why I like to talk to people about this, because I feel like a lot of people, it can seem so simple, but it also can seem so complicated, because the things that we've labeled, we shame ourselves for feeling a lot of times. We, you know, if someone's sensitive, we kind of look down on them. Oh, this person's sensitive, or this person's emotional. We don't really try to figure out really how important emotions really are, and they're, I think emotions go through, there's like an undercurrent that goes through everything in life. Really, when people are chasing things, people might say, I want money. You really want, if you really think about it, you really want what money makes you feel. You want to feel empowered. You want to feel
important.
Everything is feeling states. But, you know what I'm saying? That's the thing that people don't really realize. But yeah.
When you get right down to it, you want to feel good. And that's an emotion behind my every desire is the desire to feel good.
Like emotional shopping, emotional eating, emotional drinking, emotional spending.
Yes.
Emotional spending.
Yes.
Or emotional eating. You want some feel good food, or you want to go buy a new outfit or something. Yes. Feather, like you have a question.
Do you believe that the subject of depression and anxiety is difficult to talk about in the African American community?
I believe so, but I also believe it's a generational thing. I've noticed that a lot of people in my generation are kind of open to talk about it. But you know, a lot of our parents, a lot of times, kind of don't come from a place where their emotions were acknowledged. Their emotions kind of, right. You know, they were feeling sad, they're feeling depressed. It was like, well, we still got to keep going. We still got to do what we got to do. We don't have time to be sad, like things like that. They kind of heard that rhetoric, so
right.
They're not really used to having that discussion. But I totally understand, because especially when as Black people, we've gone through very traumatic things, and mm-hmm. I think even to cope, certain pressures and certain pains have had to be normalized in order for us to cope with them. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
I have lived in pain, but we have to be like, we still got to get through this. So in order to keep mm-hmm. functioning in this society, we've had to either suppress it or figure a way to just try to like just do what we got to do, when they kind of ignore that little voice that's like, this isn't right, something is wrong, we don't feel good. So
and I hear this from a lot of young people. They're saying that they can see what their parents are experiencing, and they see the depression and the anxiety that their parents are feeling, just trying to make it and provide for them. And it's
right.
stressful to even be in that type of environment for them.
Exactly.
Because if you're worried about trying to make it, I tell you, I don't know how. And when I say this, I hear some people say they're not making it, because I say I don't know how people are surviving off of minimum wage and trying to pay health care
mm-hmm.
and have a family.
Exactly.
It's just insane. And so that's enough to bring on some anxiety. You're trying to make sure you keep the lights on, you feed your family, a job only wants to pay you $10, if that. I'm just like, how do people make it? How are we making it? Really, how are we making it? So I tell you, people,
off of part-time work.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, you have, nowadays, we really, 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 really have to focus on creating our own income streams, or have some additional income streams to your part-time or full-time employment. Let's take a break and come back, because we have some more questions for you, Rob. Aqua Award filmmaker, award-winning filmmaker and writer. We are certainly enjoying this conversation with you. I'm so glad that you could join us tonight, too. Thank you so much for your time.
Yeah, me too. Thank you.
So we'll be right back, and we will come back with author Rob Aqua, author of Death of the Dead. You're tuned in to the Mind, Body, and Spirit radio show here on Black Talk Radio Network. And go on to Black Talk Radio Network page and donate to the Black Talk Media Project during this week. We'll be right back.
Black Talk Media Project launched the digital radio platform, Black Talk Radio Network, the first such platform created to serve the Black community specifically. Black Talk Radio Network has grown with a variety of radio hosts, digital radio stations, and podcasters. Web analytics say Black Talk Radio, the platform, has an online reach that ranks it among the top independent Black media platforms in the world. All of this is possible because of financial contributions to the nonprofit Black Talk Media Project. If you love the work we do and the voices and perspectives we bring to you every day, make a donation today to ensure that Black Talk Radio is here in the future. Black Talk Radio is new Black media for the new millennium.
All right, we're back here at the Mind, Body, and Spirit radio show. Tonight we're talking about
Depression and Anxiety, and Anxiety with author Rob Aqua. And we're also honoring Tupac Shakur tonight. His film, a biopic on his life, will premiere this Friday on his born day, June the 16th. Let me just share a quote from Tupac, one of my absolute favorites, as you already know. Tupac, here's a quote. I'm not saying I'm going to change the world, but I guarantee that I will spark the brain that will change the world. Tupac Shakur. Right. And since we're talking about Death of the Dead with author Rob Aqua, here's a quote from Tupac speaking on death. It reads, "Death is not the greatest loss in life. Greatest loss is what dies inside while still alive. Never surrender." Tupac Shakur, so passionate. Oh, my goodness. Love him. So right now we have another passionate person with us, so Rob Aqua, Rob Jenkins, writer and award-winning film maker. And now this piece, if you don't mind, I would love to share just a slither of your genius from your piece, The Bell Rings. I believe that's the title. And it reads, can I just share this piece?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. It reads, "Don't speak about drugs," said the teacher. "All of you MFs are on drugs. You need to be high in order to live in this society. We all compromise on a con premise. Lord, save me. There's got to be something better than this." Oh, my goodness.
Yes, I read that. Yeah.
Yes, yeah. Yes. Just speaking about what we were saying, just to dovetail what we were saying before the break about how people are trying to make it and survive and cope. And
yes.
It's like you almost have to, with some people, we know this, they self-medicate in order to be able to cope. And then we have people that are incarcerated because they're trying to get high because they need to escape from all of this depression and anxiety because they don't have health care or access to, or maybe they do have access to health care, but the doctor wouldn't prescribe them the Xanax or something like that because there's already research that has proven that doctors were prescribing more white people prescriptions for like anxiety or depression versus black people. The black people are supposed to just get over it, hang in there, you're tough, you can do it, you made it through slavery, you can make it through anything, you're Superwoman, you're Superman, you had your babies in the field and then kept working, you can do it. So it's too much to continue to ask for us to continue pretending to be Superwoman or Superman. And when we hear about so many people, and especially these young people, I'm so concerned about them because it's like they've been fed this bill of fake dreams about go to school and you'll be able to survive and you'll be able to make it. And that's just not happening. We see so many young people that have spent all this money and time on education, and then they're working somewhere where they could have started working right out of high school. You could have dropped out of high school. And pick up that job. So it's just sad. So Southern Light, I know you have some more questions for Rob.
Yes. So with all that we were just talking about, do you feel that there's an increase in depression in the past, say, 5 to 10 years within the African American community?
I honestly can't say that for sure. I can just go off of what I'm experiencing, just talking to my peers. There just seems to be kind of this restlessness, even for things that you had mentioned before, because a lot of us were told, you know, go to school, get out, you get a job and different things. But a lot of my generation also wants to do what they love. They want to do their passion. They don't want to just do something just to make money. So it's kind of like we feel very conflicted in a way, because it's kind of like we don't, it can depress us. And, you know, I'm not speaking absolutely for everyone, but I just a lot of people that I've talked to, it can be very depressing just to go to a job every day that you hate. You know, the boss doesn't, you know, is yelling at you for something, or this is happening. And really, you feel like you have something special inside of you that you want to share, but you can't really figure out how to get to that point to support yourself and share that with the world. But, so I've seen that a lot. And just observing and watching people, I do feel like a lot of people are living with depression and anxiety, and some people don't even know that's what it is.
Right.
They just are so used to living that way that
that's
their life.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was like you grew up into depression and anxiety and just trying to survive.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Versus thriving.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Mm-hmm. People want to live. They don't want to just survive. They want to live
life. Right. like robots. It's just. Mm.
And they know it's something inside of them saying, this isn't right. This isn't what I came here for.
Exactly.
No, and I can't see me doing this 20, not even 15 years from now, you know.
Right.
Whereas back in the day, people took jobs like, I'll just try to stay here for 20 years, get my pension, you know. But it's not that thinking anymore.
Yeah, it's not that thinking anymore.
So you participated. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
You participated in a stage performance in New York back in May about depression with the group. Tell us about that. What was that like?
Oh, yeah. So there was an event called Get Out of My Head that I was a part of in Brooklyn, in which I went up there and I talked a little bit about my book and shared what inspired it, and then also read a few pieces from it. But the conference overall was pretty much about personal stories told through performance, personal stories of mental illness told through performance, and it was an awesome show. So I was very glad to be there.
I would love to see a performance like that.
Me too.
Performance on those personal experiences dealing with this topic, for sure.
Yes, it was put together. It's presented by the Cash Cabaret, and there's this woman, Cashel. She put it together. She's an awesome individual. It was had fun. It was definitely a enlightening experience for sure.
Was it just one show?
I believe they do it annually, so I think there's going to be another one next year.
Oh.
Okay. Yeah. You'll have to let us know about that then. And
Also,
we have to have you come back to speak more on your video work, filmmaking, editing. How did you become involved closely and so intimately with your filmmaking? So I would love to hear that, because that's my new passion. I've always had a passion for filmmaking, but now I'm actually really delving into it, so we have to have you come back. But before you leave us, we'd love to hear you share a piece, if you can.
Yes, I can. Is it okay if I read the foreword?
Sure, please.
Awesome, okay. Here's the foreword. Dedicated to anyone who has ever suffered from depression and anxiety triggered by an insane and twisted society. We are in an emotional dark age. Most people on this planet do not understand the importance of their emotions. The world teaches people out of their true selves. This can make living feel like dying, and this dying can feel painful and numb. We can feel out of tune with ourselves, like shadows of what we truly feel we are, and as a result, we end up just going through the motions of life. As a people, we need healing, and in order to do that, we must acknowledge what is hurt. And many times this means confronting and conversing with the darkest parts of ourselves. This is called going into your underworld. This is called going into your death for a rebirth, as death is the dead.
Rob Aqua.
Awesome.
Powerful.
It is. Very good. Spoke from the heart. Love it.
What advice do you have for inspiring filmmakers or writers? How can they get started? What should they focus on?
Well, for writers, I would just most definitely say keep writing. And for filmmakers, I'd definitely say keep filming. You just keep doing it and don't give up. I say, you know, you can go online and learn a lot. You can YouTube things. People have different advices on how to get into this, how to get into that. You know, researching equipment. You can rent equipment for relatively cheap nowadays. You can shoot something with your friends or put a little something together and post it on YouTube. The internet has changed so many things in so many ways. You don't have to link up with a big studio just to get your stuff shown to the world. So I would say that, honestly. I just say keep going.
With the research.
Exactly.
Start with the research. YouTube is awesome, awesome, awesome. I'm always speaking about YouTube. They should actually send us a check as much as I'm talking about YouTube videos and what I can learn watching a YouTube video. Do you have a YouTube channel where people can follow you?
I don't have one anymore.
You can find it on your webpage. Okay.
Yes, everything's on my webpage.
Yeah, we can go to your webpage. Speaking of your webpage, before you leave, also share with us again how people can contact you, purchase your works, and connect with you on your webpage.
Awesome. So all you have to do is go to www.rob0productions.com. So r0bproductions.com. And all of my stuff is there for my video work and my books.
Video works and your books. And I love the titles. We'll have to talk again about some of these titles. And we'll have you back on here to share with us here at the Mind, Body, and Spirit Show. We thank you so much, Brother Rob Akwa.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing that valuable information so many people will need to hear.
Thank you for having me on. True honor.
Yes. All right. We look forward to having you return. Have a very, very, very prosperous week, and best wishes to you.
Wishes to both of you as
Namaste.
Well.
Namaste.
Namaste. Namaste. Namaste. And that was Rob Jenkins, better known as Rob Akwa, author of Death of the Dead. And when I did see the image for his book, I said, that's the image for the tarot card. So I could pretty much see that this was about transformation. And that's what, like I mentioned, people, they say, oh my God, oh, who's going to die? Who's going to die? That's what people generally think of when they see skeletons or that type of image in a reading or something. But it means just transformation, change, new beginning. So it's really a good card for you if you're looking for some change to come into your life. Speaking of which, coming in, I just loved him. I can't wait to have him back, Featherlight. Right?
Yes. That's such a good subject, and it's a subject that we don't often talk about, but we need to talk about. We need to to meet
first
it.
I'm going to talk about
to meet
next
it head on. Because it,
yeah,
I know.
I just said we only scraped the surface with him. We have to have him back to really talk about depression. We had an opportunity to hear him speak on his works, but I want to have him come back on and just speak about anxiety, depression, the challenges people face, and how can we really, really cope with that, and how do you help a family member or friends that may speak about being depressed or having some anxiety about situations in their lives, instead of just trying to hold it in and deal with it and work through it by yourself. You don't have to work through these things by yourself. That's what friends are for.
A good friend. And never tell a person, just snap out of it. Never say snap out of it. That's just one of the worst things that you can say. Because obviously they can't snap out of it. It's not like that. Yes, if they would have, they wouldn't be talking to you about it.
Exactly. I meant to ask him about this short story that he's written called And Along Came Me. It's a short story about a troubled character sleeping with taken women for his hellish satisfaction. He's sleeping with women.
Okay.
And just taking them for his hellish satisfaction. So he's just a little slut, little whore. Loping in the streets, like my grandmother used to say. Loping in the streets. It's a business out in the streets. So anyway, but Rob Aqua, you can find his works on iTunes, Amazon, and as he mentioned, Lulu. I need to look up this Lulu. So, Featherlight, you have a spoken word for us?
Yes, I have a spoken word. This is called I Rule. And I just wrote this just yesterday, so it's kind of fresh and it'll be my first time saying it. And here goes. Let me get into my character. I have to get into my character.
Okay.
Character. I rule. Hello. I'd like to formally introduce myself. I am your television. I've been given various names: BooTube, Idiot Box, TV. Basically, I tell lies to your vision. I program you slowly in a way you don't realize you're being programmed. Yeah, you don't know it's happening. Allow me to elaborate while I take a break. You see, I broadcast game shows where anonymous patrons compete to win fancy and sometimes ridiculous prizes, scuba gear when you don't swim, cars and boats you pay taxes on, even cash, for answering roundabout questions. And then I show you starving children with extended stomachs and flies around their hopeless pleading eyes to pull at your heartstrings so you'll send the money that doesn't always make it to them. It doesn't matter that I showed you the same starving children 5 years ago. It works. I broadcast annual telethons showing the crippled children so you'll call and donate your hard-earned dollars to cure the disease that afflicts them. Where the money goes decade after decade is not my business. The same disease remains, or so it appears. The cure has been there all along. The programming works beautifully, so well that diseases of the human body are now manufactured right along with the so-called remedy right before your eyes on my screen. Are you losing your eyelashes due to age? Do you sometimes feel down and out with the pressures of the world? Does your tummy act up when you combine the wrong foods? Tell your doctor to give you this. Tell your doctor to give you that. Along with whatever you're already taking, of course. You could lose your sight, your ability to enjoy sex, to balance yourself, to speak coherently, drive yourself to work, experience organ malfunction, or you may want to take your life. But your lashes may go bad, and you might even feel better for a while. Oh, I forgot about possible death, but who's counting? On my screen, I promote attorneys who make a nice grip for your loss. Sales are booming. The programming is spot on. I also show you lots and lots of violence to create general apathy, numb your senses. You know, you don't give a damn. I show you scripted killings
Then I show you live killings in cold blood after desensitizing you. I program you to accept justification for heinous acts against innocent humans, despite what you know is wrong. Through my programming, I convince many humans these massacres are necessary based on the picture I have so aptly painted about the so-called victims. The programming works so well, even the targeted humans are beginning to believe and help justify the war. Damn, I'm good. I don't stop there. Through my strategic programming, I have successfully robbed many of their natural essence, self-esteem, and empowerment, all by showing on my screen the opposite as superior and more desirable through popular videos, nice family shows, and a bombardment of what is called commercials. This has been so effective, they now do it to themselves. Ah, mission accomplished. You see, repetition becomes a habit. Habit becomes routine. Routine becomes standard. Standard becomes the norm. Anything else is substandard and unacceptable. Through my well-calculated and targeted programming, good becomes bad and bad becomes, you know, normal. I can control the mind of the masses. I tell people what to talk about. I can sell a one-eyed man to the blind. Yes, I tell lies to your vision, and I'm good. It's what I do, and they love me. I set the standard in how to dress, what to wear. Oh, get this. Just for laughs and giggles, I have big, strong, athletic, straight men wearing ladies' clothes, skirts, leggings, two tops, whatever, because I project on my screen that makes it okay. I've got power. Last but certainly not least, I inundate the masses with back-to-back-to-back programming of humans in uniform, okay, beating up other humans, inflicting great bodily harm and sometimes unwanted death, and committing outrageous crimes while demonstrating outright prejudices against the innocent, and still come out smelling like roses, heroes of society, and gain amazing support when the same acts are performed live, no script. Programming, uniform equals white. Get it? I roll. Look at the time. I gotta run. I have to do a commercial for a paying sponsor. Their trip. Ciao. Namaste.
Ooh. Feather Light, you and your performances. You're just a woman show. When are you going on Broadway? Oh, just go on Broadway. You just those you have to just perform those pieces so that people can see you actually give your interpretation of your words and your spoken words. It's just so powerful. Television.
Tell lies to your vision. And I was just you know, I was exposed to the lies that the television tells long ago. I was exposed at a very early age because I love to read, and I've always been a reader. And I read this book called 1984 when I was in my early 20s. And I'm the type of person, I don't have a closed mind. I'm thinking, wow. So what's on the television tells people what to do. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I thought, I'm not going to let that television program me, you know.
So, I mean, it's so amazing to see the things that the guy wrote way back then. The book was called 1984, and it was written long before then. So some of the same things that are happening now. Mm-hmm. You know, he who rules the media rules the mind of the masses, because the media, through the television, it programs a lot of people to think a certain way. To think a certain way, to do a certain thing. People see guys with a skirt on TV, who's that, Kanye West, and you think it's okay? No! No! It is not okay. That is not okay. Okay, unless you're in Scotland somewhere. But, I mean, it's just amazing.
Or in Ghana, or somewhere where it's a certain type of dress, a jalabiya. If you're Akon or something like that, in Ghana.
Yes, for a purpose.
You just put on a skirt.
I'm just going to put this on.
Fashion for me.
Yeah.
And speaking of skirts, and then we're moving on to our African spirits shortly here to honor Tupac. But speaking of skirts, one thing I do not like is I do not like to see these men in these tight jogging pants, these skinny leg jogging pants. Where did that style come from?
Oh, yeah.
I'm not into that.
I thought about that when I was writing it. I was like, and these skinny legs, oh my God, is it so unmanly?
I just don't like it. I know men talk about a lot of things they may not like about us. So I'm just going to use this moment just to talk about that. Those little skinny leg jogging pants that they wear. Throw those in the garbage.
Yeah.
Take them to Goodwill. Put them in that dumpster where people donate clothes. Don't wear those anymore. I don't like them.
Oh, my God.
They can wear them if they want to. But if you wear them around me, I'm going to tell you, you need to take those off. For real. But thank you for sharing that piece, Featherlight. In the 1984... book. That is a book that one should read if you have not. I think that you can actually maybe watch the movie on YouTube and listen to the audio
book.
Yeah, you can listen to the audio book. For people that ride the train or you travel, jog, walk, whatever, you can listen to the audio book.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. It's much more impactful, the book.
Indeed.
The movie
loses
that a lot.
Thank you, Featherlight, for sharing that. We are going to move into our African spirit. Let me just share a little bit about our African spirit person before we get into our video. Well, no, you know what? Let's have our music. Let's see, Scotty, can we have our African spirit music? Because we need music for this lyrical angel.
Hey, I'm sorry, Black Rose. I don't have that clip saved and readily available. I totally forgot you wanted to start doing that. I apologize.
Oh, no problem, no problem. That's okay, because guess what? I can go ahead on and move right on in to Tupac Amaru Shakur, born Lassane Parish Crooks. You know, we're always talking about Tupac here at the Mind, Body, and Spirit radio show because I just love him so much. Born June 16th, 1971, and he was killed September 13th, 1996. And anybody that's ever listened to us, I can tell you exactly what I was doing on that day. I've already told that story. I won't go into it. I was at the nail shop, and we all just kind of like broke down when we heard about Tupac didn't make it because he'd been hanging on for like 5 days. Oh my God! And we just was just done when it was announced that. Transition, but Tupac Amaru Shakur, also known by his stage names Tupac Machiavelli Pac, he was a rapper, actor, brilliant brother, revolutionary. He sold over 75 million records worldwide, and that was as of 2007. His double disc albums, All Eyes on Me, which that movie will come out. His biopic has that title, All Eyes on Me, premiering this Friday. And his greatest hits are among the best-selling albums in the United States.
Let me just share a little history on All Eyes on Me. All Eyes on Me is the fourth solo album by American rapper Tupac and the last one to be released during his lifetime. It was released on February 13, 1996 by Death Row Records and Interscope Records. And it was featured on the Billboard Hot 100 number one singles, How Do You Want It, How Do You Want It, and California Love, California, California. And it featured five singles in all, the most of any of Shakur's albums. Moreover, All Eyes on Me, which was the only Death Row release to be distributed through PolyGram, blah, 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 made history as the first double full-length hip-hop solo album released for mass consumption. It was issued on two compact discs and four LPs. See, the young people don't know about compact discs and LPs. So he's listed and ranked as one of the greatest artists of all time by many publications, including Rolling Stone. He was a superstar in every sense of the word, a musician. He was the face of West Coast hip-hop during the 90s. He was an advocate. He spoke out on police brutality and financial greed. He's best known for his albums Tupacalypse Now, which released in 1991, and Strictly for My N-I-G-G-A-S, which released in 1993, Me Against the World, 1995, All Eyes on Me, 1996, The Don Culluminati, The 7-Day Theory, 1996 also. He's one of the best-selling artists, as we mentioned. He consistently ranked as he's been consistently ranked as one of the greatest and most influential rappers of all time. He was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame on April 7th, 2017. I voted for him. He started out, some people may be aware, he started out as a roadie, a backup dancer for MC and the alternative hip-hop group Digital Underground. I remember Digital Underground. I used to like them. And I remember Tupac being a dancer, and he did stand out. He stood out just like Busta Rhymes stood out in that group that he was with, Leaders of the New School, I believe that was the name of the group. So, I mean, some people, they're just natural stars. Now, this song, Dear Mama, which everybody likes, and you always hear it around Mother's Day, Dear Mama is a song that he released on February the 22nd, 1995, as the lead single from his third studio album, Me Against the World, 1995. The song is a tribute to his mother, Afeni Shakur, and we've talked about Afeni Shakur on here before. Afeni and her husband were both active members of the Black Panther Party in New York in the 60s and 70s. And, of course, Afeni was acquitted of more than 150 charges of conspiracy. And she was able to win those cases and get off and set herself free. Power to the people. Afeni, we lost Afeni also. But Tupac Shakur wrote this song, Dear Mama, for Afeni Shakur. And the song speaks about, it details his childhood, living in poverty and his mother's addiction to crack cocaine. But he argues that his love and deep respect for his mother superseded the bad memories because she was there for him. And he expresses that in the song. I just absolutely, absolutely love Tupac, such a beautiful, eloquent brother, and I guarantee you, I don't care what anybody say, no one can touch him. Now, Biggie was a lyricist. He had that little flow about himself, but Tupac spoke about really our conditions, and he was just that lyrical angel to me that spoke to the people about our conditions. Brenda's having a baby. That song, that was absolutely one of my favorite songs when Tupac first came out with that song, Brenda's Having a Baby, and speaking about how Brenda was young, and the brother comes in. Well, how does that affect me? That's not my problem. That's up to Brenda's family. Well, let me tell you how it affects the whole community. You know what I'm saying? That song right there, I was like, whoa. Everybody needs to listen to this. I would just like tune in to that song. I think MTV at that time was playing videos of black people, because, you know, MTV didn't start out playing black videos. But by that time, either Rap City or one of those shows would play that video in heavy rotation. So let's hear this clip from Tupac Shakur, our lyrical angel, honoring him tonight as our African spirit.
Next is a person who's very dear to me, a person who's a second-generation revolutionary. So please help me in welcoming Brother Tupac Shakur. First, I want to say peace to my mother. She's not here, but I got to give a peace out to her, because I wouldn't have been here if it wasn't for my mother. And I looked in the front of this thing, and it says, start from within to rebuild our original greatness, right? Okay, well, that's what my mother did. You know what I'm saying? And I'm listening about freedom fighters and strugglers. Well, you got to understand that when it was in to have a gun and to be in the street, my mother gave that up to be in the house and wash the dishes, you know what I'm saying, and feed us and put the thoughts in our brains, you know what I'm saying, because we didn't get any of that history from all of those soldiers that we lost. We got none of that. They all went to jail, if you can remember. They all went to penitentiaries. We didn't see none of that knowledge. If it was not for my mother, who stayed home and didn't go out and do all that, then I wouldn't have had shit, excuse my language, but I wouldn't have been nowhere. So what I'm going to do, hopefully, is I am Tupac Shakur. I have to be a reminder that we can't chill out. No, it ain't time to cool out and banquets and all that. It's still on. It's on just like it was on when you was young, and you want to say fuck that just like you said fuck that back then. So how come now that I'm 20 years old and ready to start some shit up, everybody's telling me to calm down? You know, don't curse, go to school, go to college. Well, fuck that. You know, we had colleges for a while now. You know what I'm saying? And it's still Brenda's out there, and niggas is still trapped. You know what I'm saying? And it gets me irked. because I understand that it's not going to stop. You know what I'm saying? It's not going to stop until we stop it.
That's right.
And it's not just white men that's doing this to Brenda. No. And it's not just white men that's keeping us trapped.
Right.
It's black.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? We have to find the new African in everybody, in all of us. Because if we keep running around looking for black and who got the most colors on and who got the baddest dashiki on, we still going to get, excuse my language, fucked.
Right.
Because it irks me that my mother right now is going through, you know, she has to get clean. This is somebody who I watched travel the whole country, you know what I'm saying, during a time when women were scared to speak up for the Black Panther. She spoke at Harvard, Yale, everywhere. And now I see my mother as what's really going on. You know what I'm saying? And I don't see no big parades around my mother now. And she done got a dozen fucking awards. And I don't see nobody there. You understand what I'm saying? So about all this, I take that lightly. I take all this lightly. What I want you to take seriously is what we have to do for the youth.
Right.
Because we're coming up in a totally different world.
Right.
This is not the same world that you had. This is not the 60s. This is not that. We grew up BC, before crack. That should say it all.
Right.
You understand what I'm saying? We did not grow up without parents. You had parents that told you this and that, and this is what went on back in the day. Now you don't have that.
Right.
You have young kids, 14, coming home, their mama is smoking out or doing it to their best friend to get the product.
Right.
You understand what I'm saying?
Right.
So that means that it's not just about you taking care of your child. It's about you taking care of these children.
Because
that's what's out here. It's a gang of children. You understand what I'm saying? And it hurts. It hurts. And it bothers me, not hurts, it bothers me that I have to sidestep my youth to stand up and do some shit that somebody else is supposed to be doing.
Right.
You understand what I'm saying? There's too many men out here for me to be doing it, because it ain't my turn yet.
That's
I'm supposed to be following behind him getting the knowledge.
Right.
I don't even got a chance to get the fucking knowledge. I can't go to college. There's too much problems out here. I don't got the money. Nobody do. You understand what I'm saying?
Right.
So what I'm saying is it's not as easy as we mapping it out to be.
Right.
And we got to stay real. We got to stay real. Before we can be New African, we got to be black first.
Right.
You understand? We got to get our brothers from the street like Harriet Tubman did. Why can't we look at that and see exactly what she was doing?
Right.
Like Malcolm did. The real Malcolm. Before the Nation of Islam. You got to remember this was a pimp. You know what I'm saying? The push and all that. We forgot about all of that. and I strive to be enlightened, we forgot about all our brothers in the street,
right.
About all our dope dealers, our pushers and our pimps,
right.
And that's who's teaching the new generation.
That's right, right.
Because y'all not doing it.
That's right.
I'm sorry.
That's
but
right.
It's the pimps and the pushers who's teaching us. So if you got a problem with how we was raised, it's because they was the only ones who could do it. They the only ones who did it.
Right.
While everybody else wanted to go to college and, you know, yeah, everything has changed. They was the ones that was telling you the white man ain't shit. Here you go. Check this out, young blood. You take this product, you switch it, you make money, and that's how you beat the white man. You get money and you get the hell up out of here. Nobody else did that. So I don't want to hear shit about nobody telling me who I can't love and respect until you start doing what they did. You understand what I'm saying? To me, this is Mecca. You know what I'm saying? This is the black family. I see it here. But what makes it even that much more sad, or what makes me want to cry, is because as soon as I leave here, so does Mecca. You understand what I'm saying? We're going back to the real deal. Right out there, you're going to see them same sisters and Brenda. They right out there. And y'all going to get in y'all cars and drive the fuck home. You know what I'm saying? I apologize. I apologize, but check this out. You can't be no more offended by my curses than what's really going on. That's real. That's real, y'all. That's real. Y'all got to really be true to that. You got to be true to that. Because you letting the media and the white man cut us off. You letting them tell you that the rappers ain't real, and you know, you got to either be, you know, the intelligent person or you're a gutter person. We all the same. We all feel it like y'all feel it.
Right.
I just can't hold a straight face when I see it.
Right.
This is proof that we can be together. The young black male is the feature of us. And the young black sister is the feature of us. It's gonna be what you put into it. So if you don't put shit into it, don't get mad and blow up.
All right, and that was Brother Tupac Shakur. Be sure you go and see that movie, All Eyes on Me, if you're a Tupac fan. And, I mean, it's a film about a revolutionary brother, young brother, Afeni Shakur's son.
True revolutionary.
Let's support that brother. I am. Let me just speak for myself. You can do what you want to do. I'm going to see it. Let me just say that.
Oh,
and, honey, for me to get up and go see a film, baby, there has to be a thing to see. Because I rarely travel to give them my money in these theaters. But I will go and represent it and see the Tupac film. I for sure will see that. All Eyes on Me. All Eyes on Me.
All Eyes on Me.
All Eyes on Me. All Eyes on Me, actually, Dear Mama, was released in February 21st, 1995. And do you know, by July 13th, 1995, 5 months later, that song was certified platinum.
Wow.
Certified platinum within 5 months. Within 5 months. Yes, 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 yes. Just a lyrical angel. Tupac Shakur, our African spirit honoree. Thank you so much for tuning in to Honor Tupac with us tonight. And so, Featherlight, you want to take us into some Love the Body? Oh, before we go into Love the Body, I'm sure you have some words that you would like to share about Tupac and another quote, and I have another quote also. I'm just moving us right on along.
You know, with my generation, one would think, you know, oh, she's in the Tupac, but the All Eyes on Me, when my mother got it.
Oh, my God. My grandmother purchased All Eyes on Me, people. Yes, she did. She purchased All Eyes on my granny.
Yes.
My granny.
Yes.
There were a lot of older people that purchased that one.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. I have a playlist. I have a playlist of just Tupac songs, certain songs, and when I want to really have a good workout, dance workout, then I put it on and let it rip. But I just really love the, as you mentioned, Brenda's having a baby. You're the one that told me about Brenda's having a baby. You said, listen to this, listen. I was like, oh, hey. And the other one, help keep your head up. So those are so inspiring to me. I mean, I saw beyond all what what the media wanted us to see. They wanted us to see this roughneck who disrespects women, and he gets into trouble and he carries a gun. But there was another side to him. He used the rapping, the hip-hop, rather, as a platform to get his message out to the people. But he was a real revolutionary. He was a freedom fighter. You know, he either said, I'm going to do the freedom fighter thing or I'm a saint. But, you know, he came from that family, that blood.
Fire, that blood.
Listen to him, and him talk. Yeah. You know,
he would often weave in some of the revolutionary thinking and philosophies in his music. And many of us that come from that kind of community, we picked up on that, of those that weren't even a part of that community. You would hear that message in his music, and he would deliver it so passionately and so fiercely and ferociously. You were just captivated I was captivated by his voice and the message. So, just like Brenda's Got a Baby, the lyrics, I hear Brenda's got a baby, but Brenda barely's got a brain. A damn shame, the girl can't hardly spell her name. And then the other brother, that's not our problem, that's up to Brenda's family. Tupac says, well, let me show you how it affects the whole community. And he breaks it down, what this young girl had to experience being raped as a child and having a baby that she knows nothing about. She's a baby herself. And that's such
and the father of the child is a cousin. And you know how older cousins take a little young and a young a member of the family, you know, and they're wanting love. So they get trapped into that. It's just it really puts you there, empathy wise, as to what really goes on. Don't just look at a young girl, oh, she's just got a baby. Oh, look at her, she's fat.
But you don't know what her story is. And to speak to that, Tupac says in this Brenda's Got a Baby, Brenda's got herself a boyfriend. Her boyfriend was a cousin. Now let's watch the joy end. Oh, Lord have mercy. I will wrap it out in my Tupac voice, but we need to move on to Love the Body and some breathing, honey, because I need to breathe.
Oh, one more tip about Tupac's mother when you mentioned that she had gotten on drugs. We found out through the author that we had on the show that an FBI agent got her hooked on drugs.
Mm-hmm.
He was planted, and that's how that came about. So that was done a lot. Okay, love the body, love your body.
Yeah, that was a common tactic to dismantle and decimate our community by the depository of those drugs in our community.
Exactly.
So, that was the plan. All right. Oh, yeah.
Okay, so,
love the body.
Have a pen and paper. Well, I guess you don't do pen and paper anymore. You got your phone. Or these techies, whatever you do to take notes, I want to give you some information. Love the body, and it will love you back, just like a vehicle. Take good care of it. Do preventive maintenance. It will take you far, many miles. And if you do the opposite, it will break down on you every time when you least expect it. You can buy another car, but one body, one birth mother. That's the deal. Okay, so cocktail to unclog your sinuses. You got four little ingredients. In a pot, combine 1 cup of tomato juice, 1 teaspoon of minced garlic, 1/4 teaspoon cayenne pepper, 1 teaspoon fresh lemon juice. Heat until warm and drink. I'll repeat. 1 cup of tomato juice, 1 teaspoon minced garlic, 1/4 teaspoon cayenne pepper, and 1 teaspoon fresh lemon juice. This will unclog your sinuses. Last week I gave a 1-minute immunity boost, but I just kind of rushed through it right quick. So this is a 1 minute cold shower that you can take to ward off illnesses. Research in Thrombosis Research Institute in London has found that cold water actually stimulates the immune production. The theory is the body tries to warm itself during and after a cold shower, which speeds up your metabolic rate, and let's go to this way, activating the immune system. So, another tip for youth and vitality, rinse your face in cold water for about a minute to firm and tighten your skin. Ladies, this is great. Men, you might want to try it too. For your makeup, ladies, once you've done your makeup, run an ice cube over your makeup to set it for that dewy, fresh look, and then place the paper towel over your face to pat dry or let air dry. Don't rub. You look fantastic. Okay, one other thing, homemade baking soda and coconut oil toothpaste. 2 tablespoons of coconut oil and 2 tablespoons of baking soda. And you can add a few drops of peppermint oil if you like. And you can make more if you like, depending on the container you're going to use. But this is great. You all know, you should know, that the regular toothpaste they sell on the market is very harmful for you. That's why they say do not swallow. Coconut oil is antibacterial, antimicrobial, and antifungal. So, and baking soda is a mild abrasive, which gives you a nice clean look. Your teeth, it whitens your teeth. I use it. I have pretty white teeth. And restores your pH balance. Okay, gotta love the body. So relax, sit in a comfortable chair, raise your shoulders up, let them down, take a deep breath, breathe from your tummy, take a deep breath in, inhale, stomach balloons out, exhale, again, inhale, and exhale. This time, when you inhale, raise your left hand, put your left hand on your tummy, you're just below your navel, that's your energy core, and it's called the Dong Qing in China, and raise your right arm. Inhale, raise your right arm, and try to get your arm as straight as you can, and exhale. Slowly release. Repeat. Inhale. And exhale. Put your right hand on your Dong Qing and excuse me. Do the same with your left arm. Inhale. And exhale. Inhale. And exhale. Inhale, slowly turn your head to the right. Your chin is looking at is above your right shoulder. Exhale, back to the center. Inhale, look to your left. The chin is parallel to your left shoulder. Exhale, back to the center. Inhale, raise your chin up to the air. Inhale. Exhale, bring back to the center. Inhale and exhale, drop your chin down to the collarbone. Inhale, back to center. Raise your shoulders up to your ears. Lock them. Drop your right ear to your right shoulder. On your exhale, tuck in your chin just slightly. Breathe normally. Inhale, back to center. Exhale, drop your left ear to your left shoulder. Tuck in your chin just slightly. Breathe normally. Inhale, back to center. It helps to have a slight grin on your face. Smile. Thank you so much for joining us in our breathing session, Pranayama, and thank you for listening to our show.
Yes, and namaste, namaste. Thank you, Father Light, for the breathing and the love of the body. Peace and good night, everyone. We will be back next week. Have a beautiful and prosperous week. Best wishes, and live your life. Peace, good night, and namaste.